Well, hello everyone and welcome back. Welcome to session 5 of A New Republic of the Heart, a guide to being the change for real with Terry Patton. And my name is Sherry and I'm part of the Terry Patton support team.
This is a very juicy and enlivening consideration if we really take it to heart. And a lot of the work here is taking very profound and paradoxical ideas, you know, philosophical and spiritual insights, and understanding them as a challenge to our very way of being and allowing ourselves to feel and drop and soften and open and allow another richer, truer way of understanding reality to arrive for us as an embodied experience. So I'm particularly excited by the evolutionary impulse as a deepening of what we engaged in our last session on wholeness. I'd like to begin with a poem, one of my favorite poems. It's one you may have heard before, by Jennifer Wellwood. It's called Unconditional. Willing to experience aloneness, I discover connection everywhere. Turning to face my fear, I meet the warrior who lives within. Opening to my loss, I gain the embrace of the universe. Surrendering into emptiness, I find fullness without end. Each condition I flee from pursues me. Each condition I welcome transforms me and becomes itself transformed into its radiant, jewel-like essence. I bow to the one who has made it so, who has crafted this master game. To play it is purest delight. To honor its form, true devotion. I really love this poem because it so elegantly and accurately evokes the quality of wholeness that really is our context and experience, the paradoxical nature of wholeness. As we participate in embodied human living in relation to this greater wholeness. So I'm going to invite you to drop in and let's see if we can arrive in wholeness so fully that we touch into the very impulse of evolution. So please straighten your spine, find your way to a comfortable seated position. Take a few deep breaths and settle. And let your attention soften and deepen as you breathe out, especially relaxing more and more fully into the simplicity of sitting. The paradox that in some sense sitting allows you to simply be awareness, and also that we arrive there often by staying very, very closely to our sensory experience, our embodied sensory moment-to-moment experience. So returning now and now to feeling and observing every micro moment of every part of every breath. Feeling the breath in the nose, in the throat, in the chest, in the belly, even in the shoulders and back. Arriving again and again, more and more completely here and now. And resting as the open intelligence in which all experience always arises. Recognizing, allowing yourself to recognize that every bit of our experience is consciousness itself. It is, these are impressions within the field of awareness. Even our aches and pains, even our most physical experience, even our cognitions of places and travel and all these things that seem to be so much bigger than us. It's all permutations of our sensory, intuitive, mental, emotional, spiritual experience. And all of it arises in awareness. And there is a quality to awareness. Quality of utter simplicity, of deep okayness. The great awakeners tell us that if we rest most deeply into awareness, as awareness, the quality is of bliss, love, love, bliss. What might first just be sensed as an okayness has such profound depth that it is delicious beyond limits. And if you really radically let go into this, as this, there is a radical liberation. We realize we're never in the dilemma we had conceived ourselves to be. Could never be. And there is a temptation to simply go into this radically subjective freedom. But if we trust this liberation and this okayness completely, we can go all the way through this liberation from embodied experience as a individual mortal body, mind. Into our deepest identity as the open intelligence in which all our experience as a person, individual and mortal, rises and falls. And we can feel that sense of liberation without needing to in any way disconnect. Then we notice that this utter peace, this utter moveless stillness of the witnessing awareness, the feeling witness, without trying, without dilemma, without needing to, spontaneously tends to more articulation, more individuation, more consciousness, more complexity, more connectivity, more integration, more cooperation, effortlessly. These are the ways that wholeness spontaneously moves. When we're feeling the deepest well-being, freed of any anxious motives, we don't need to escape into our samadhi. We can turn directly toward our life, this moment, the form condition, the apparent dilemmas of life and death, of sickness and old age, of suffering, of trouble, so to speak. There is no troubling us. We are free. To be here. As this process of processes. And our well-being makes us a presence of wholeness, of possibility, of creativity, of the creative advance into novelty. As Whitehead put it. The impulse of evolution, that desire to be of benefit, that impulse toward more wholeness, aliveness, goodness, truth, beauty, health, coherence, integrity. It's just how it is to be. simply be. Thank you. Yeah. So, this moment is infinitely deep in a couple of different ways. On the moveless, unmanifest side of this tree, there's infinite depth. And here in this embodied, dualistic, conditional side of this tree, there is this way that we become the very presence of that which made it so that if you leave hydrogen and helium alone long enough, they eventually write symphonies, build cathedrals, put telescopes into orbit, and wonder about the meaning of it all. They also fall in love. And through our own experience, can fall in love with everything we see, with each micro moment of this infinitely deep now moment. And this infinite potential of evolution, that which could give birth through evolutionary emergence to life from dead matter, to consciousness and culture from seemingly vegetative life, is right here, right now, as you and me. And maybe able now in new ways as us to create new miracles. And we can be more or less in touch with this ever-present dynamic potential. How cool is that? I would like to begin, I think it's dynamic and fun if we can begin with a live interaction. So I hope somebody will, in a spirit of generosity, lean forward to be of service to everyone here by offering yourself forward in dialogue with me. I hope you'll consider raising your hand. And while you do, there are a few more things I want to say. One of them is that part of what this being in touch with the impulse of evolution, as the impulse of evolution, is this curious, unreasonable optimism that enters the picture. You have the courage to face the darkness, but you also have a feeling sense for the fact that this is not a dead karmic process. This is a living engagement, and lots can happen. And that feels so different, so much more enlivening and exciting. Well, I see that Grant has raised his hand. Thank you, Grant. Hi.
Hi, Terry. Hi, everyone. Oh, wow. Well, thank you so much for that opening, Terry. I'm just swimming in the sweetness of it. I wanted to offer a kind of paradoxical dynamic that I felt in your opening meditation, which is this notion of activism versus a more passive stance than the fact that our interiors, by what we put our attention on, is, in a sense, a really bold form of activism. You've said it many times before, but our contracted state isn't just something that happens to us, but it's something that we do again and again. And I was just reminded in your opening how something as subtle as making the choice in each moment to expand, move back towards wholeness, is how we can participate in the evolutionary unfolding moment by moment and be a stand. And something as seemingly minor as that is so fundamental and such a blessing to know that to be of service can be that close to how we want to show up in the next moment and how we can choose to relax that tension, to relax that contraction and move back. And so this gulf between what some would call the contemplative side versus the active side really kind of marry and resolve themselves in how we decide to show up in each moment. And at the root of every activist impulse is primarily to open up our consciousness, to expand into that greater wholeness that we can participate in as the agents, as the eyes of evolution itself. And I just feel really grateful for that opening and for a reminder that it's a choice, and how we show up is a big part of and fundamental to all of the other things that we do under the rubric of activism. So thank you.
Yeah, thank you. As you know, you've worked with me before and you know how much I do emphasize choice. It seems useful to present something else in this moment that adds a nuance to that distinction, which is that sometimes I make the distinction that in a way, our most healthy choices aren't even really choices, they're recognitions. That there doesn't have to be a me who is choosing in the sense of an efforting at all. There really only needs to be a recognition of what is more true, more whole, more fully expressive of the very nature of reality. And of course, that's where we're attracted. And so the very persistent tendency, not just to contract, but to contract in a way that makes it all about me and whether I'm going to practice or not, succeed or fail, pass the test or fail the test. It's good to breathe that out and just let that truest dimension of the heart's intelligence recognize what is so. And therein lies all the healthy choices we could ever need to make. And yet I use the word choice. So, I mean, you're not bringing in a word I don't like. It's a word I do, because there is a sense in which everything other than the utter relaxed, awake condition in which there is that profound recognition is something we're doing in this self-contracted way. And there has to be a kind of humility at the level of that self-contraction that is willing for it to relax. And in that sense, the word choice is kind of inescapable part of the dynamic, despite the fact that in a way, it just is allowing what is to be. Yeah, thank you. Thank you so much. Oh, well, Eric, I see you've raised your hand too. I want to invite, we are now in the Me Too era, and we in the Me Too era have to notice that women frequently hesitate more than men to speak up. And we're outgrowing some of those patterns. And hearing from a couple of guys and me being a guy, I want to invite voice of feminine dispositions into the space too. Go ahead, Eric.
Hi. So this chapter in this material is like candy to me. I love the evolutionary impulse as a thread that is spirally stitching together relative and absolute, and so I tend to see myself when I contemplate this or try to come up with practices working with this to wind up falling on the absolute. I mean, even if it's Brian Swim's beads, where you go from, you know, the Big Bang to plasma to, you know, the first molecules to the first stars, it goes really big. And if you switch it around and go inward, you know, to the smallest God particle that the super collider can smash apart, and in smaller than that, you get to the same absolute area. And so the only way to work with it is to drop down into some kind of a pre-modern visualization of something that I can work with or work towards in my activism as something simple that I can grab as a deity, or like Jeff Saltzman says, you know, when he's working out, he pretends that he's pumping a village well to bring water to people, and that makes his personal workout practice into a spiritual practice. So there's that, and just a riff on what you said earlier about the Me Too on this Supreme Court thing. I keep wondering, if you've got these conservative, healthy judges who are healthy blue, and I'm thinking, or blue, and they've got reasonable, rational, super rational minds. And I'm thinking of Clarence Thomas here. Somebody's got to pop green and become a postmodern foo-foo believer on the Supreme Court. If development's happening at all, why wouldn't it happen to people at that last part of life where, I think we've got pieces for change. And when I look at the world and the evolutionary perspective, I'm often hopeful, but it's hard to push into that. So if you can riff on that.
Oh, wow. You know, that's something I could riff on at great length. And I think I don't want to hijack this particular lesson in that direction in a great length, but I can say in a brief way right now. I think you're exactly putting your finger on something. I think that there's an opportunity right now for, you know, there is integral theory argues that there is a permanent polarity between left and right, and that there are healthy functions that conservatism and liberalism bring to any social order, which means that there's a tremendous pathology that's taken over the Republican Trump Party in this time, and it isn't bringing out the best in anybody. But there are people, there is a natural aristocracy of wisdom. There are people who are more developed, who have more conservative and more liberal dispositions. And we're coming to a moment where relatively, you know, in some place, in some arenas, very few individuals have an opportunity to play an outsized heroic cultural role. If conservatives can recognize that the pathologies on the right now ask for a very powerful repudiation, a swing to the left, which can take the form of blocking the Supreme Court nominee, not so much on the basis of what he did in high school, on the basis of the current lying that we seem to see. He evidently lied about his involvement in some things when he was confirmed 12 or 13 years ago. He seems to obviously be dissembling about his past now. And just that action of lying is, in my view, disqualifying. And I think that a mature conservative who might not want to make everybody's high school misbehaviors fair game every time they do anything for the rest of their lives, still the insistence on lying right now and covering up lies in the past might be a basis for them saying, wait a second, my loyalty to truth, my loyalty to the country, my loyalty to health is greater than my loyalty to my faction. And if enough people, I think that it is a relatively small number of people, something like a handful of people in each precinct who are conservative in their disposition, but who recognize this pathology dynamic. If enough people make that decision, we have this huge landslide, which might bring both houses of Congress over to Democratic control. And so I think that this is a moment in which feminine leadership is crucial, but it's also important for there to be men and even white men who say, wait a second, to the reactive right wing, you know, like that, perceiving that the left is creating a hierarchy with white men at the bottom, there are people on the right who are reasserting a hierarchy with white men at the top, but they don't represent you or me. And there is an opportunity for us to kind of, in a more noble or heroic way, reclaim the moral center of what, you know, you don't speak for all of us white men. We have a different disposition here. We want partnership with women. We want partnership with people of color. You are screwing up our future prospects, in fact. As a white man who cares about the lot of white men, I don't want you representing us because you're painting a target on our back. You're creating an imbalance that's going to have to be corrected in a way that'll disadvantage all of us. Speaking for white men and caring, not just about white men, but also caring about white men, we argue for something different. So those are thoughts that have been in the forefront for me lately, given our current events. And thanks for giving me an opportunity to share them.
Thanks.
Yeah, great. I think Therese has raised her hand.
Yes. Hi, Terry. Hi. Please forgive me. I've been out of the country for a few weeks, and I'm behind on my reading. So I'm taking a risk in participating because I'm not up on my reading. But this, what you raised in the meditation, is really exactly why I felt the need, and I felt compelled to sign up for your course. This whole question about what are the spiritual competencies we need to develop at this time, so that we can support what you're referring to as the impulse of evolution. You know, what, so there's this question of choice and what we pay attention, what, you know, our intention and our, and what we pay attention to. But it seems to me this is really the edge that I've been really dancing with, if you will, is this question. I was at the Celebrate Life Festival in Omega, and Thomas Hubble also talked about this at one point during the week. And I don't know who it was that made this point, but it was correlated to To what's possible even in like stage four cancer patients, you know, the idea of a spontaneous remission, like the possibility of miracle, even at the edge, which is where we're at. So I am very, this is really the piece that speaks so deeply to me, is like, how do we hold a seat at the table for what is not yet imagined, not yet known, something truly innovative?
I think it's our practice that, in a way, what we are doing in all of our practices, which we're about to get into in just a couple sessions, we're going to get into our chapters on practice. We, in a sense, get out of the way so that the evolutionary impulse has a clear channel, a vehicle through which it can move into the world through us. And even ultimately, not just through us individually, but through our relatedness to one another, through the we. So I'm resonating completely with everything you just said. Thank you.
So the resonance field, right? The possibility of the resonance field and how it can amplify possibility. So yeah, it just seems like I can't quite put my finger on it, but just marinating in this question of what else, you know, we are, yes, can we clear away, you know, work on our shadow material, deepen our capacity to be clear vessels for the transmission of whatever needs to come through. But still, I don't know, it still feels like there's something else that I don't know what that is, but that there's still something else that is needed, and some kind of what I would call spiritual capacity. So anyway, I just kind of I'm dangling the question out there in case others have some thoughts about that.
I think that this, it's important to let go of the separated mind that thinks about the problem, imagines that if I can get together this and this and this element, then I have the critical mass that solves that thing. Whereas in fact, this evolutionary view breaks the spell of solidity. It wakes us up to the fact that I'm not a noun, I'm a verb, and you know that everything is a process. I'm a process made up of countless processes in play with other greater processes. And the intelligence of this system resides in every cell of my being. And it also resides in the collective of which I'm a part. And certain aspects of it are alive here as me in my own unique way. And as I open out and allow that deeper spiritual nature and intelligence to be present through and as me most completely, evolution has a vehicle through which miracles of evolutionary emergence can come into being. And in a way, my deepest practice is just to keep getting out of the way. And that has many, many unique expressions, which I hope we'll be getting into a good deal more, in great deal more detail. I hope you will catch up on the readings, and because where we're going, the chapters get longer. This is the last super short chapter in part one. And there's really a lot to be gained from combining yourself in a deep way with the chapters to come. So I think we'll find that the granularity of our engagement with these paradoxical, living, intuitive, you know, that there's this odd play between intellectually grasping a whole lot of very specific distinctions and being sharp in our discernment, and then just letting go of mind and allowing ourselves to be continuous with the life energy through which, you know, the conscious light that is being all things can be all that it can be through us more fully as we get out of the way. Yeah. Thanks so much, Therese. Alyssa.
Yes.
Hi. Welcome.
Here I am. Can you see me? Okay. Yes. Hello, Terry. Hello, everybody.
Yeah.
I started by putting a question in the chat about, you talked a lot about evolution. And I asked the question, where does the sacred, divine, or universal intelligence fit in? And I got it in the meditation that really consciousness is the divine intelligence that's moving through all life and creating life. And so thank you. I think I'm pretty settled on that one. Would you agree? Are we speaking the same language now?
For sure. I mean, and it's also true that all the words we have for the divine are the fingers that point at the moon and the living presence of God. This is the thing that our atheistic versions of spirituality tend not to be able to appreciate and benefit from, which is that in deep spiritual practice, God is alive, a living force, and that we become, for one thing, we're in love with God, and we're seeing God in the form of everything, and God has a way of making use of us and uplifting us and finding God's way into the world through us in a way that is juicier than, you know, when we say the evolutionary impulse, we're turning it into something that abstract and something that, you know, like a force of physics, like gravity or something, like the evolutionary impulse or gravity or whatever. Whereas the word God has a connotation that is more juicy, and it has more to do with love. One of the things that I sometimes bring forward as we really deepen in our spiritual practice, it's so juicy. It's like a love relationship with God in which we're making love all the time. You know, we're having great sex in a sense, like the way that the whole body feels different when you're in love and you're having an incredible love affair and you're, you know, making new discoveries in the bedroom every night or something, you know, like that feeling of that aliveness in our relationship with the divine is a possibility. Mm-hmm. And in this particular formulation of things, I'm not emphasizing that because mm-hmm. it's very important that we have an intellectually rigorous and that there are many different frames of meaning that we need to activate in order for this to come alive. And the one I'm activating here is not about that so much, mm-hmm. but it isn't deleted from my understanding or what mm-hmm. I'm hoping for you to find your way into and participate mm-hmm. with. Mm-hmm. It's only a different way of looking at it mm-hmm. because what we recognize is every perspective is both true and partial. That's a big lesson in next week's chapter on the integral disposition. What that means is wherever you stand, you're going to be able to see some things about reality especially well, and other things about reality are going to tend to fade from view. So in any moment when you think, oh, I've got it now, you know, I don't think we ever stand in a place where we have it all. To some degree, it's only in our surrender, our in-loveness, our sense of astonished wonder, our complete transparency to divine awareness and divine love that we're sort of in the neighborhood. But even there, we need to have a kind of humility because the embodied, you know, human body mind in space and time is never going to reflect the totality of all existence and the very center of the, you know, the way the unmanifest and the manifest are paradoxically one and the same at all times, in motion in ways incomprehensible. To some degree, we're just reduced to a kind of, it's better that we let ourselves get, I have a deep background in a devotional spirituality, and in the process of that sadhana, I have had spiritual experiences where I have felt like I became a woman and I was being taken by my lover and penetrated and pervaded by divine light. I'm closer to like being, you know, it's like sort of orgasming in that kind of an experience is closer to like, it's about as close as I've gotten to being, you know, undifferentiatedly the divine. You know, some of them are on the meditation cushion in a different way, I guess. I mean, really comparing these things, it's always, there's always a distortion in any thing we can encapsulate in language. Mm-hmm. We're in the presence of that which is beyond words and beyond perspective.
Yeah. And unfortunately, so many of the words for the what we might call the sacred have so much dogma attached to them that, you know, you can't get away from the chatter. And that brings me to what I really wanted to ask you about now, is I love it how you talked about evolution in terms of time and how it's speeded up since the beginning of time. Evolutionary changes, which may have taken 100,000 years, you know, now we're moving, we're practically in nanoseconds now. With the things are changing. I don't know if anybody else has said that, but it's like it's brilliant because I've been feeling for years that time is it's speeding up. Things are speeding up so much, and there's so much chatter with the speeding up that I don't know that we can function without a practice. And it seems like the practice has been getting more and more. Intentional, more and more focused. It's like, because there is so much chatter, everything's evolving faster, perhaps, and there's so much chatter with it to get away from that. You have to get into that, the pulse of the intelligence, the pulse of the evolutionary flow of consciousness. Yes?
Yes. In a way, becoming transparent to that deeper level of our being, which is God. And there's so many different ways for that to happen. Sometimes it's kind of like a pure awareness dharma. Sometimes it's a love dharma at the heart. Sometimes the nature of the unmanifest absolute is so paradoxically everything at once that it has so many facets that we can be drawn beyond ourselves in multiple ways. And that's why an integral view is necessary now. We really have to have that in order to be, because the world we live in has so much complexity, paradox, ambiguity, chaotic dynamics. It's really quite mm-hmm. something. Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Thank you.
That was lovely.
Thank you.
Oh boy, Annika, Karen, and Laura have your hands up, and I want to take your questions, and I will keep them up, but I want us to go into a breakout where we can go into this experience a little more deeply. So, Sherry, what I'd like to do is put you into groups of three as much as possible, and I will participate. I'll be in one of these groups. You might find yourself in a group of two, depending on how the math comes out. We'll probably have to have some groups of two, unless it comes out perfectly. And what I'm going to invite you to do is to very briefly speak as yourself, just as the, you know, Terry or Alyssa or Grant or whoever, and then drop in and speak as awareness itself. Speak as the one who is the witness of the space in which Terry or, you know, your identity and your thoughts arise. And then to go a little further and speak as the impulse of evolution itself. And I want to invite you to just feel into that and to let your contact with each other begin to become a sacred vessel through which it's almost like a lens, like your connection with each other, the way that there's me and you and then something in between, the us. Let that we be a lens through which this deeper dimension of your own being can come forward. So I'll repeat these directions in brief after Sherry's set us up for going into the breakout groups. Hi, everybody. Welcome back. Well, I sure enjoyed my dyad. I hope you all did. That was quite something. Wow. Okay. Well, where are we next? Let us take some of the people who raised their hands and hear from you.
Okay.
Hi, Annika.
Hi, Terry.
Hey.
Hey. I'm having a little trouble with my doggy here. He's restless, so he might make some noise. I apologize. I wanted to ask you after, I think you might have answered my question when you were talking with Therese. But I'm just going to say it again because I think I'm going to say it differently and maybe we'll get somewhere. When I'm just being me out there in the world and just going out into the day and going through all the contractions that my world has, is there some little cue that I can be giving myself to bring me back and relax and be? Because we've all said this before, when it's quiet, when I'm just outside with myself or with the dog or walking, I can get to that point. I can recognize the wholeness pretty easily, but it's so hard to get there from a contraction, because it's habitual to just stay in it and try to work it and figure it out.
Yeah, well, you can't really. In a way, you know, we have to have had some anchor, some moment of liberation, whether it was on LSD or whether it was in a meditation hall or whether it was falling in love with a person or having a profound relationship with a blessed spiritual teacher and feeling that kind of spiritual love affair. You got to have some sort of a intuitive knowing. Some part of the heart has to know the truest, most real, the real truth of this moment, deeper than my contraction, is something full and beautiful. You know, that recognition is something we can return to. And for me, the thing I do just spontaneously, and you may do it already because it's so universal, is what I call heart breathing, is to just take a breath in the midst of life experience to the heart and from the heart, including the whole body. And the disposition of the heart, let the disposition of the heart kind of blush open in, you know, through the entire feeling body. And very often the way it's going to have to begin is with a little bit of self-compassion. Because if you're feeling contracted, you're probably, some part of yourself is mad at some other part of yourself and you feel like you're screwing up. And you've got to cut yourself some slack and forgive yourself, you know, just to shift that. And as you do that, then there's also going to be some room. If you've forgiven yourself, you can begin to see the sometimes even very ugly qualities in other people, the contracted qualities in other people. So a lot of it is actually quite forgivable and lovable. Some of it's a lot harder to forgive and love, but something in the heart knows that, you know, this is great saying. It's like the simplest saying by Neem Karoli Baba, who was Ram Dass's guru, the old man in the blanket from Be Here Now. Never put anyone out of your heart. And so there can be a kind of way that you're in touch with this dimension of being that is not subject to the rise and fall of experience and the contracted identification with what is at risk and all of that. And there can be a little bit of, you know, dropping from that concentration. You know, fear tends to attenuate your attention and draw you up into the mind. And there's just a point of connection. And it may be, it different moments require a different thing. You know, like one moment, what may be necessary is, especially necessary may be for you to be in beginner's mind and just be open. In another moment, what may be appropriate is for you to be humble and willing to learn. Notice that every moment is an opportunity for practice and learning, that life is a school, you know, like that kind of an attitude. Another moment, it may be a matter of real discernment. Maybe sometimes you have to stand up fiercely to defend somebody. You know, you've got to have courage. Maybe what it's asking for is courage. Maybe it's asking for creativity. Each moment has its own unique imprint. There's not a formula. But when you're connected to that foundation of heart intelligence, and this is something we'll get into a lot more, chapter 6, it's a real theme. And so we'll be returning to it a lot. I hope that's helpful.
Very much so. And that was what I got from your answer to Therese, was that practice will help me see. I'm so new to. I just started my practice last summer with you. Thank you so much. And it has started. I can feel the difference. But I think I have to just keep practicing more and more, and maybe that'll help me just be quicker. No, I can reach that.
And forgive yourself for being where you are in this process. Mm-hmm. Keep forgiving yourself. There's something perfect about this. Nobody else had to deal with the peculiar mix of karmas and challenges and traumas and who knows what all that you have, and you are transforming that karma, and it has its own organic speed, and there can't be a problem with it.
Okay,
in fact, there's something uniquely beautiful and noble and divine about it. And the more you're trusting the process of your life, the more of you will have permission to show up with clarity.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah, thank you. Okay, we've got some more hands up. Laura, hi.
Okay. Hello there.
Hi.
So I think that this evolutionary impulse has lived in me a very long time in the form of, who am I? What is my purpose? And as I'd stand at the threshold of manifesting any of that, it just all seems so very, very big. And choice, as opposed to recognition, was overwhelming. This recognition piece is really helpful to me, because there's not a right or wrong, really. It's an unveiling. And I think for me, the pathway has been accompanied in going forth beyond the threshold by two pieces, recognizing and honoring what I have to offer specifically what my loves are and what I want to care for, and trusting that, and then being willing to go forth and both triumph and fail, to be willing to make a mistake, to be able to just step forth anyway, because there's just no more time to wait on the threshold.
Yeah. Beautiful. I love hearing you say that, Laura. I celebrate you. I celebrate us. I celebrate the impersonal clarity, intelligence, and love that are manifest in those confessions that you're just spontaneously giving voice to. Aho.
Well, thank you. Thank you for providing this forum. It's really a gift. And talking with everybody in these groups is an energetic kind of connection that's been missing from me. And I thank everybody.
Oh, thank you. Well, I see that there are a couple of hands up. I'm so sorry. I can't get to you now. We are pretty close to the end of the time, and I haven't really introduced the next chapter, which needs an introduction. So please give me your attention here for chapter 5, The Integral Revolution. It's a long chapter and it's intellectually dense. This simple feeling intuition of, you know, something, wonder and care and appreciation, is the foundation for what we're getting into. But now we're going to slice and dice things in a much more rigorous way. And we're definitely going to be using our more academic, discriminative mind, and I think in a fruitful way. Many of you may already be students of integral theory, in which case I hope you'll read this chapter for the ways in which it reflects, I think, some refinements, especially what I have to say about radical integral ecology isn't really part of the conversation that you'll hear standardly among integral thinkers, but I think it's important. And if you're new to integral theory, please do what you can to understand this. Just read it slow. You know, you may want to read it a couple times. Certainly listening to it as well as reading to it can be helpful. This is probably the most abstract, intellectually dense of all the chapters. And yet, I think that if you download it and really combine yourself with it, you'll find that it'll give you a view through which aspects of the world around you will kind of pop into visibility, the way that, you know, if you're viewing one of those 3D posters and you get your eyes defocused perfectly, and then suddenly this 3D image kind of jumps into view. These integral distinctions can function that way for you. So I hope you'll consider really making use of this chapter. I'm excited to get into it, and I've loved spending this time with you. Sherry, can you help us all become visible and unmuted so we can all say goodbye and complete making contact with one another? I'd love to. Please turn on your videos and let's all say goodbye as we complete.
All right. Are we ready? In 3, 2, 1.
Bye.
All right. Bye.
Bye, everybody.
Bye. Bye-bye. Bye. Thank you so much.
Bye.
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 Hi, Sherry.
Hi, Sherry.
Hi,
Sherry.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Wonderful evening.
Good to see you again.
Great.
Bye.
Bye.